Well, what a great way to spend a Thanksgiving night, huh? This is fun. Who's behind door number three? We'll open it up in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go now. Door number three. Hello there.
Hello. I think I must be one of the few people who currently doesn't believe Barack Obama is the second coming.
It's that accent. My favorite Brit, David Icke.
Hello, George. How you doing, mate?
David, how are you?
I'm good, yeah.
Where are you? Are you back in the UK or are you in the States?
I've been moving around like crazy in the last little while, and it shows no sign of stopping, but I'm in London at the moment.
Just
down from London, anyway.
I didn't have a chance to meet you at the conference up there in San Jose where you packed the house, and it was absolutely riveting, and a couple people went in there to try to get me to get in to say hi to you at the end, but then my conference was, you were so big that I had to wait a half hour for people to come out of your place in order to some of them to trickle into mine.
Well, it is quite extraordinary to me what's happened, given the fact that when I started out nearly 20 years ago, I couldn't fill a phone box, that people are now more and more beginning to see that the world is not like they thought it was, and they're looking at another explanation for it. And unfortunately, at the moment, we are in a very dangerous period with regard to...
Where did David go? Well, Tommy, you're going to have to call David back because he's behind the secret door and they got him somewhere. So, you know, we'll get David Icke back and we'll get him right on. Now, this is incredible because every controversial guest we have had on, something has clipped their phone lines all the time, including Jordan Maxwell, right? Who is now really concerned about things that are going on. And David, of course, is one of the most controversial ever. And I think they got him clipped, too, because that, you know, that was just, you know, boom, there he goes. So let's go back to David Icke now. And there you are, David. The Illuminati's getting you, David.
Yeah, was it something I said, George?
Yeah, I mean, just poof, you were gone. You know what's funny, though? Every time I have a controversial guest on, something happens to the line, then we get them back and they're okay. But it's almost as if they're telling us we can do anything we want. Clip. There you go.
Well, they can do anything they want as long as 6 billion people allow it to happen. They can't do what they want when 6 billion people or even a fraction of that wake up and realize where the real power is. And it's not with these goons in dark suits and dark glasses and uniforms and all the rest of it. It's with the people. But what's happening at the moment, George, with this whole Obama myth is that genuine people are being misdirected into believing that this is a change in direction when it is nothing more than the next stage in an ongoing agenda. Because, you know, when you're starting to get really deeply into where you want to go, which is an Orwellian state, which is the destruction of national sovereignty, the creation of a centralized, globalized dictatorship, you can't have a Bush with no communication skills and someone who is blatantly a warmonger, blatantly has very little intelligence, and blatantly has an agenda. He's not going to sell it, George. You need a salesman, and Obama is the salesman. And the people behind him are particularly Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, and with David Rockefeller, was the co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, one of these major Illuminati fronts. And he has an agenda which would make people's hair stand on end. And he's been articulating it in books for 40 years.
Yes.
Now, he's the man behind Obama. Also, George Soros, an associate of Brzezinski, who his...
The billionaire.
Yeah, and he uses his network of foundations to manipulate behind the scenes. In fact, Bloomberg.com ran a story recently that one of the major organizations behind Obama's Democratic Party in terms of developing policy is something called the Center for American Progress. And as Bloomberg pointed out, who funds that? George Soros. George Soros, former board member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and you've only got to look at the team that Obama's now announcing to see what this change and something to believe in, this hope, was really all about. It's been a massive mind manipulation operation on the American psyche, and that's why Obama has never, throughout the campaign, articulated with any specifics what his change, hope, and something to believe in actually means. Why is that? Because once you start to get into specifics, you narrow the number of people who are interested in what you have to say because they see what you mean by your vacuous, meaningless words. So what they've done, and they've done it brilliantly, is turned Obama into a blank screen which people can project onto him what they see as the change, hope, and something to believe in, and what it means to them, what those words mean to them. So they've turned Obama through the campaign into all things to all people. And what's going to happen now, and it's already happening, is you're going to see what those words really mean. And the change is not change for the better, change for the people, change to more freedom. It's going to be the continuing change of our society towards a global dictatorship and an Orwellian society.
I was with some folks who own a couple of gun shops in St. Louis a few days ago. They're concerned that there's going to be a massive effort to take away Americans' rights to bear arms.
Well, the thing is about Obama, he is going to sell a cyanide pill with sugar all over it. You know, you can use things like coming together. We must come together. Yes, we must come together.
Absolutely.
We must have unity. Well, that would be nice, but unity in and of itself is not the point. It's what the unity is designed to achieve. Nazi Germany was unified for a long time into the Second World War, but was that a good thing? My goodness me, no. What is this unity about? And you can use terms like that, coming together, we must have unity, to actually impose a centralization of power under the name of unity. You can say we must have a unified North America, so let's have a North American Union. We must have a unified monetary system to solve the problems of the financial crisis, i.e. A world central bank and a global financial dictatorship, which I've been predicting in my books for 15, 20 years. And all these things can be sold under the guise of something that people actually would like, which is coming together, which is a change for the better, and that's what he's going to do. And also coming together, he's been talking in his speeches about compulsory community service for school children and college students.
Right.
He's talking about having a national civilian security force, which is as well-funded as the military. And all these things can be sold under the guise of community, when actually it's just adding more and more bricks and cement to the wall of imposition and centralization of power. And the idea, and this is another myth, you see, the greatest form of mind control, George, is for people to want to believe something is true.
Desperately so.
Yeah, exactly. And they have played that card because Barack Obama is surrounded by experts in mind manipulation and opinion manipulation. I mean, a simple question. I mean, are we so naive? It seems that many people are, as to believe that someone of a truly independent mind, a truly independent stance, is going to come out of nowhere and is going to run the best funded and slickest election campaign in American presidential history. Of course not. A, he didn't come out of nowhere, because that doesn't happen. He's been brought through, trained, and prepared for this for a long time by people like Brzezinski And the funding was there because he's a front man for those who are providing the funding. And are these people that run Wall Street and all the rest of it, no, who are their representatives are being added to his administration by the day, are they appropriately on Thanksgiving? Are they really turkeys voting for Thanksgiving? Are they really? No, they're not. They are funding a man who is there to sell the next stage of their policy, which is more and more centralization, more and more imposition of control.
And we're going to see that. What will some of the signs be, the obvious signs, so that we can see if this unfolds?
Well, we're already getting many signs by the people he's putting in his administration. They are anything but people of change. First of all, I'm just going to give you a quote from Brzezinski in a book he wrote in 1970. What's that, 40 years ago? Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. This is what he wrote 40 years ago. The technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date, complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. Now, he is describing the world that we now live in, because he knew it was coming, because he's fundamentally connected to the network that's been bringing it in. This is the man behind Obama. And you look at his Treasury team that he's been announcing this week. The Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, which is the prime bank controlling the Federal Reserve, which is a private cartel masquerading as the Central Bank of America. He's a former employee of the Council on Foreign Relations and of the notorious Kissinger Associates, which has been in my books for a decade. And he's also an attendee of the Bilderberg Group conferences, etc. Obama has made a guy called Larry Summers, National Economic Council Chief. Larry Summers is a fanatical supporter of globalization, which is where this agenda with Obama is designed to go. And when Summers, in 1991, he was Chief Economist of the World Bank, he was exposed publicly for sending a memo advising that the World Bank should dump toxic waste in poor countries because the costs of the ensuing ill health and death would be less in those countries in rich countries. Now, this, George, is a man who has just been appointed by this man of the people. I stand for change, hope, and something to believe in, Obama. So watch the people that he's appointing, and you'll see where the direction is going. Also, another important point to make is, you know, I mean, Hitler and the Nazis knew this. And if you just keep repeating something, people get to believe it just by repetition. That we had the idea, this myth, that Obama is against war. No, he's not. He's spoken against the invasion and occupation of Iraq. We'll see what he does in office about that. But he's not against war. He's now calling for what, 200,000 troops to head for Afghanistan? Some ridiculous figure, anyway. And he's calling for European troops to go there to Afghanistan. He said that he would have no problem bombing Pakistan in the war on terrorism. That he would use force if necessary against Iran. And you know, Brzezinski, I've been following this guy for a long time. Brzezinski makes the neocons behind Bush look like sissies. And Brzezinski was the man, when he was national security advisor to Carter, who, and he has admitted this publicly in a Paris magazine a few years ago, he started to fund in Afghanistan, opposition to the Kabul regime at the time that was controlled by the Soviet Union. And as he said to this magazine, he did that because he wanted to entice the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan and give them, quote from Brzezinski, their Vietnam, to weaken the superpower, which they did.
Brilliantly they did.
And you know, George, it cost 1 million Afghan lives. And when that was put to Brzezinski, he had no problem with that because he had achieved his end. What's the problem? We'd weaken the superpower. Of course, the people he funded and trained to challenge the Kabul regime, to entice that Soviet invasion, then became known as the Mujahideen. They brought a front man out of Saudi Arabia called Osama bin Laden to front them up. They then became the Taliban and what is claimed to be Al Qaeda. Now, this is the man, George, I keep repeating this, who is behind Barack Obama. One of Brzezinski's sons was an advisor to Obama during the election campaign, and his other son was advisor to John McCain, which kind of is more than symbolic of the one-party state that America has masquerading as a two-party state. And Obama, you see, when I was a journalist years ago, I came across this technique which tabloid journalists used to use. If they had someone, say a distressed family who didn't want to talk to the media, what they would do is they would send the first guy in. He would say that he was from a different newspaper to what he was actually from. He would be aggressive, he would be deeply unpleasant, and he would cause even more distress to this family.
He
would then leave. They'd then bring the second guy in.
The good guy.
The good guy who told them that he was from the paper he was from. And the whole scam was, look, I am disgusted with my profession sometimes, and I tell you what, you talk to me exclusively, and I'll make sure that that guy and no one like him ever comes and knocks on your door again. Now, you take that, and invariably, the people talk to him because of that. Now, you take that to what's happening now. You've had Bush, who has been in there, a blatant warmonger, a blatant man following an agenda, and he's created the problem, not just in terms of the military situation with Afghanistan and Iraq, but also he has created or been the front man to create. I mean, he can't tie his shoelaces, but to create financial mayhem. Now along comes Mr. Good Guy, and under the technique I talk about, problem, reaction, solution, you've had the problem, you've had the reaction, now here's the solution. It's a man called Barack Obama, and he's going to now say, this is what we need to do to solve the problems, but the person that fronted up the problems, Bush, is controlled by the same people, the same network. Because in the end, the neocons behind Bush lock into the Brzezinski network. The same network that created the problem is now, through Obama, going to offer the solution. And it's going to be more centralization. It's going to be more imposition, masquerading as freedom and change. And,
people
keep their eyes on the ball here, George, because this is a real dangerous time, because too many people have bought the myth.
Will people perceive it as welcome change?
Well, the thing is that, interestingly, if you go back to Nazi Germany, there are many parallels. There may not seem to be, but there are, because in the 1930s, you had military and particularly economic mayhem in Germany. And along came a man who was considered a great orator, though, my goodness me, not when I watch him, called Adolf Hitler, who was offering what? He was offering pride, in new pride in Germany, hope. Something to believe in. He was offering change, and he was offering hope, absolutely. Now, a lot of people seem to forget that Hitler was actually voted into power by the people originally. And then, a few years down the line, when he'd had a massive support, Germany, pride in Germany again, they realized that they'd signed up for a dream and got a nightmare. You've got the same parallels here in terms of something being sold as something it isn't, and you've got a very good salesman to do it. And
well, we're going to have to just sit back on this one, David, and see how some of these things unfold with some of the signs, as you point out, clearly there. Wow. Door number four next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to take phone calls with our guest behind door number four, but we need to find out who that might be. Hello there.
Hi, George. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, and I'm going to have to chat with you a little bit longer because I haven't figured out who you are yet.
Well, I believe after making that journey to the other side three times.
Danyon Brinkley!
That the other side listens to Coast to Coast with George Norrie.
They have some kind of radio tuning system up there, I'm sure.
Well, it's just frequency modulation, I am quite sure.
I got a kick out of you talking to Zahi Hawass this week. That was remarkable.
We are old friends. I have known Zahi since 1987.
I really wanted to push him about the ancient astronaut theory, and then once I heard his passion about the Egyptians building those pyramids, I said, you know what, I'm not going to go anywhere by questioning him because we already know his answer, so I'll leave it alone. And I guess that was a smart thing to do, Daniel.
But that's not the real Zahi. I mean, I know a person and have watched him through the years, and I guess we are just great friends because, George, there is so much I know. After I've been looking at pyramids all over the world. The first time I was in Egypt was in 73. It's just like the Mayans. I've been going there 40 years looking at this stuff. I'm like you. I want to know the answers.
Sure.
So I have known Zahi throughout his career. But the person that you hear on the radio and the person talking is the true person, but his absoluteness is not near as resolute when you know him personally. Because if anyone would listen to exactly what he said and took a pocket calculator, and knowing that there's 2.3 million stones weighing between 70 tons and 2.5 tons, if you had 10,000 people working 53 years, and if they were working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're still they still have to lay one of those blocks about every 11 minutes.
There's no way they could do that.
No way.
Not conventionally, at
least. Old story was it took 100,000 23 years. Now it's 10,000 43 to 52 years.
So you think, Daniel, privately, Zahi has his own doubts about this?
He has even more knowledge about all that crazy stuff, all that stuff. Zahi has ruled that plateau for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
There is nothing he doesn't know. And he knows about things if you listen to him. He only describes about what has been excavated. That doesn't mean he doesn't know where things are, but he will not excavate it because it will open up or change possibly the theory that they've come to their conclusion.
Absolutely. You know, and I am, Daniel, a huge Edgar Cayce fan. I'm convinced that there's some kind of chamber at the foot of the Sphinx.
It's not quite.
Zahi swears up and down there's no way.
It's not quite there. But a 1939 French expedition, if you read the paperwork on a 1939 French expedition, you will have a different perspective. I keep and honor what people tell me from around the world because, you know, George, after 93 countries, because I've become like an anthropological thanatologist, which is someone who studies anthropology, cultural societies,
sure,
and death. So Egypt has a death cult, the Incans have a death cult, the Mayans, the Indians, Kali, they all have these death cults. And when I became so fixated with death because of going through it, then I have been through all these countries and I've developed relationships with people who will tell me stuff. But you don't let it out. I mean, you keep and honor what they believe is their system because if you look at Egypt, Egypt is the strength of the Middle East. The very moment they think there's something Zionist or religious in there, that's why I brought up Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to read the gospel, the four gospels that talk about Christ's birth and Christ's death, only one says he went to Egypt. The other three says he went home, and one said he stayed in that he spent the rest of his days in Nazareth. And then there are the forgotten years. Only one of the gospels say that he went there, and so look at the Coptic religion, and you look at so much of where the Catholics draw the religious context, like the word Amen. It's Amen Ra. It's the celebration of the sun.
Well, now that we know it's Daniel Brinkley behind secret door number 4, we'll be back in a moment and take your phone calls with Daniel in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Daniel Brinkley, our guest. Your phone calls as well. By the way, Daniel, happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
And the same to you, George. You know what was excited about listening to David just earlier?
What's that?
I believe a lot of what David is saying is true. But I also believe that, and this is people who read Saved by the Light, my original book, and the Boxes of Knowledge, you know all those stories, those what became predictions when I didn't know as much about the near-death experience. You know, I'd never heard of it. I told it all, and these things have come true. Well, all that stuff was revealed. I wrote these predictions and these things down in 1976. That they're in the book Saved by the Light, published in like 93. But all of this stuff comes to pass. But the problem is, we win. What David and what people who do this prophesying does, they never forget that there is an underlying flow of energy that's going on that allows the world to control us financially. But then there is a spiritual side of us that will see the light in the next 2 years. And their big deal of world conquest and this all that stuff that David talks about passes away. Because we will not stand for it. And that's the coolest part about people like David, who is out there, who gives you good insight. But he forgets about the spiritual power of we as spiritual human beings, as opposed to just trapped mental human beings.
Good observation. Let's go to the phones. First time caller line out to L.A. we go. Hey, Stephen, you're on with Daniel Brinkley.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Stephen.
You know, I have this question for you, but it's also it's about me, you know.
I take a breath, take a deep breath.
I'm wondering, you know, if the fear of hell doesn't keep people from doing what's right. I mean, there was a, you know, I've been listening to this show for 11 years, and there was there was a guy on this show years ago that used to talk about, he was a time traveler supposedly, and he talked about how in his time, now at that point, I imagine that the wheat had been separated from the chaff, and the people that were left were willing to die for their cause. And the way he put it was, there was two paths, and one path was victory, and the other path was to God. And today, what I see is an apathy in the people, and I'm wondering if this, if the idea of everybody's going to hell hasn't kept people from, you know, for instance, killing someone. And I hate to say that, but in the name of doing something that's right, you know what I mean? Ultimately, you know, that's what it's going to boil down to, is when people talk about taking the bull by the horns and making what's wrong right, people will have to die. The other side says the same thing about us. So, I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, first, no one ever dies. It never happens. It will never happen. And if we're all connected and everything is a part of the one, then this term that we call hell or halos from the Greek, which now becomes the English term hell, it means it's a part of heaven. So I believe in various degrees of heaven. But on the other side, I believe this. There is a spiritual awakening that will move this so-called 2012 event. It's all about a spiritual awakening. It takes the kind of stuff what David was talking about and the kind of lack of, not so much apathy, but the lack of ever making a commitment and hoping someone's going to take care of us. People are going to become awakened. People are going to be more intuitive, like the girl talking to James earlier. And they're going to trust those intuitive parts about it. Like now, this UFO story, the fact that we're not alone and the fact that there's somebody else out there completely destroys the mindset. So all of a sudden, we come awakened by these events, Steve, and what they'll try to do is make holographic images of a threat against the Earth once we all realize these things exist. But we will outsmart that, because the flow of energy that's occurring now in the universe is to the spiritual consciousness. As that opens up, we will all begin, from 2010 to 2012, all those people who are thinking and in apathy, they're going to see from a spiritual point of view, no matter matter how much propaganda is brought forth. And Coast to Coast is leading the way. I mean, the people on this show and people putting it out there to give everybody choices. So remember.
Daniel, should we stand back and do nothing because God's going to take care of us, or should we stand up and take care of our rights?
No, we should stand up and take care of our rights.
Even at the fear of death.
Well, since it never happens, you're only standing for a principle that has value. And you will see this come over the next 2 years as one of the most remarkable events in history. You know, it's the same thing as the world's not flat. This is what always gets me. The world has fallen apart, quote unquote, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loaned people more money than a house was worth, and they defaulted on their mortgages in the United States, and Indonesia's collapsing over that. That is the biggest bunch of nonsense I've ever heard in my life, and it is a planned program to where you only think you're your credit rating as opposed to being a spiritual human being. Well, everybody will wise up to that, Steve, just like you are. But here's what we stand for. We stand for the ability to question the principles and the moral values by which we elect those who serve, and we demand that they answer back to us. This is what's going to be the change. It's what founded this country. It'll be the whole truth, and no matter what, they'll never win.
Let's go to Russell in Chicago. You're on with Daniel Brinkley. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, sir.
Hi, Russell.
Good morning, Mr. Brinkley. I have been seeing spirits all of my life, and when my grandfather passed away, it was a while ago, I walked up to him while he was laying in the casket, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I said, "Grandfather, come in a dream, don't come like everyone else." So one day I got sick, and I was away from home, and I always talked to him. You know, I said, "Grandfather, I don't think I can make it back." And then when I got to where I was going, I laid down, and then it seemed like everything went dark, and then this fog came, and when the fog dissipated, different parts of the furniture in the house where he lived, in my grandparents' house, appeared. And then when the television came on, and I saw the football game, because we're always over there on Thanksgiving, and I said, "Grandfather," and I looked, and he was standing up instead of sitting in the chair. And when he asked me how I was doing, and we smiled, and I said, "Okay," because, as a matter of fact, he's the only one who ever talked to me, because all the rest of them would just stand over me. And this would be in the daytime and at night. It doesn't make a difference. And after a while, something said, "Well, you got to go." And I said, "Grandfather, you died." And he disappeared, and he never came back. And I wonder why. My grandmother told me I shouldn't have told him he passed away.
No, don't ever believe any of that. He already knew that. When you were getting sick and feeling bad, a lot of times in the spiritual world, they have a rite or a place that they come that sets a value and a tone. And what he was doing, and the fog and the mist are only shifts of consciousness, like in the multi-universe theory. It is dimensions by which he travels through, number one, to make you secure. Number one, to make you feel comfortable with where you were in his home. And the second, that he could bring back those conscious memories for where you were going to go next. And that's different from seeing spirits. You see, Russell, that's different. A lot of people see images and orbs and spiritual beings because they have a certain frequency, they have a certain sociological background that they grew up, a society that accepts these things. But what you were doing was feeling the presence of security that only your grandfather could bring at a time when you most needed it. So I would say you not only were feeling bad that day, you were either worrying too much or you had a conscious thought about something you couldn't resolve at the same time, which was weakening you physically. Am I right?
Very good. Let's go to Linda now, east of the Rockies. Linda, a few more moments to go here.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Linda.
Honor. You know, okay, on the other side, have you seen aliens on the other side?
No. But in the early days when I was laying in the bed, because I spent 2 years learning to walk and feed myself, I would drift in and out of these levels of consciousness. And I never ever really talked about this because I never knew what they were. I would see these beings as I would go from one world to the next world because the lightning had really done a lot of damage and I had to spend a lot of time sitting. But I would just alter into these worlds, and I would pass through these worlds of people who look like praying mantis. I mean, this is what they look like. And they would sometimes recognize that I was passing through their world, and then a lot of times they didn't pay any attention to me. I never knew what that was until, like, the 2000s. Now, this was in 75 and 76, but I never knew what it was until someone said the term insectoid, and they started describing it as a – I think it was in Santa Clara, George, and they started describing these beings as the most intellectual beings, and they were part of the development of the Earth. And so I really began to realize that maybe these levels of consciousness exist, but do I believe in – extraterrestrial, interdimensional realities? Absolutely.
Yeah, and our people, when they die, they don't go to sleep, do they? I know some religions think they just go to sleep.
That's nonsense. Christianity thinks that, but that's nonsense.
No, Christianity doesn't.
It thinks you lay in that tomb. You lay in that grave till Jesus comes to raise you back up. That's why so many people are in graveyards, because you rest until Jesus comes back.
That's true. Well, I don't.
Here's the point. That never happens.
I mean, isn't it kind of like your personality goes? Would you describe that as your soul? Like, how would you describe your soul?
Your personality stays intact until you have a panoramic life review. You lift out of your body, you're still conscious, and you have your personality. Okay? And then you see the tunnel, you're met by your relatives, which means you have acclimated that life that you had just lived, and then you see your life pass before you. You watch everything that's ever happened, you look at it from a best friend perspective, you literally become every person you've ever encountered, and you feel the value that you had made in the world you lived in. And then that personality shifts. It's laughter. It's lighter. It's spirituality is fun. I always tell people, if it's not funny, it's not spiritual. And what happens is the true soul consciousness comes. A very wise, dignified, magnificent being comes into play. So the personality is a personality that you created in order to view the life that you also created. And the soul consciousness is a far more brighter, brilliant, beautiful, and funnier you than you even know now.
Let's go to final caller, Concord, California. We go. Richard, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi, Richard. George, and hi, Daniel. My original question was, my mother passed away, but before she did, she was in a coma for 8 years. And I want to ask you, where are they when they're in a coma? And then my second question is, in 2012, the Mayan Indians and all of them had the calendar ending in December 21st, 2012. And according to Edgar Cayce, the Earth's axis was supposed to shift. And I'd like to get your take on that.
Okay, well, number one.
A minute to go, Daniel.
All right, number one, when you're in a coma, you only move through the first two or three dimensions. As long as that body is breathing on its own, you don't leave it. But you can travel through dimensions. But that she could always hear everything that you could say, so she never really left, but she could still go to places, visit with friends, be places, but not just trapped right there in that bed. Second, the Mayan calendar, the Earth is already wobbling now. It's already been proven that the Schumann resonance is varying in degrees, and we're at a wobble right now. But I believe that the 2012 is a point of conversion, the end of one era and the beginning of a next one, because the predictions that were in Saved by the Light, I went to 2014 was the last number, and we were still here. We had overcome all that stuff that David talks about, and we had begun to move in a more spiritually conscious dimension and reality of ourselves. We'll be able to tune into George's show just walking around.
Daniel, my friend, enjoy Thanksgiving, what's left of it, and we'll talk to you later. Daniel Brinkley, up next, the final door, door number 5. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's go now behind secret door number 5. Hello there.
You've been thinking on German thoughts, haven't you?
Jordan Maxwell.
Well, there you go. You found
How
me
are
out.
You?
Pretty good, actually.
You thought I'd get stumped, didn't
you? Yeah, well, I know that you know my voice too well.
I do. How was your Thanksgiving, my friend?
Well, quiet, peaceful. Nobody.
Good.
But, it's interesting that we should be doing the show tonight. Lots of
Why?
Interesting things are happening.
That's true, especially in the world of the Illuminati.
And the occult world is very, very, very active right now. Very. And I'm seeing it, you know, a long time ago, I brought out in one of my lectures that the way the African hunters many years ago, like 100 years ago, when the big game hunters went to Africa, they would pay the native population to spread out into a huge circle of miles around with bottles and cans, and and then at the particular moment, they would start beating on the bottles and cans and yelling and frightening the game in the bush. And they would keep closing in the circle until finally the animals that were there would come out into the open. And the game hunter didn't have to go in to look for them. They're coming to you. Well, that's what's going on in the world today. The whole world is being herded into some kind of a plan pin for us. And they're banging the drums and you know, blowing up things and frightening the people. But it's all being orchestrated. The whole thing's being orchestrated by powers that be. So it doesn't surprise me.
I had a chance, Jordan, to chat with Peter Joseph, the producer of Zeitgeist 1 and then Zeitgeist Addendum.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, as the entire planet knows right now, Zeitgeist 1 had a lot to do with you, who you are in your life. Just got an email from a old program director whom I respect greatly, who now sends information around to other broadcasters, John Rook. And, you know, he is he's on the Zeitgeist bandwagon as well. Pretty poignant stuff, though. You know, you may not believe everything you see in it because we have our own views. But,
of course.
You know, he's pretty good. Joseph did a pretty good job with that series.
Oh, I think so. I think the mere fact that there's well over 20 million downloads.
He didn't expect that. That's what's so strange.
And I had no idea the thing was even being done until someone called me and told me about it. I didn't even know he was doing it. You know?
Tell me about your life now. What's going on? What's going on with the comic books and things like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I got a couple of cartoons out there, too. Someone in Hollywood is being, or somewhere is doing cartoons now with me, and I'll send you the links.
Yeah.
And it looks very professional. And
is it a big Jordan Maxwell cartoon, or are you a little boy in the cartoon?
No, big, and
okay.
Both of them. And it's just clever. It's being done. They've got Alex Jones and myself as cartoon characters. Yeah. So I'll send that to you and watch it. But
Jordan, you're one of the best, Jordan.
That's
Alex Jones impression.
That voice you can't miss, yeah.
No.
But
not at all.
And then of course I'm getting a lot of response from around the world now for people are starting to pick up on the fact that I've been talking about this stuff for so many years, and they're saying, well, everything you were saying is now coming to pass, and I'm afraid that that's true. And I don't know what to do about it.
And you sound, you know, the more I see you, and you're like a big brother to me, but you sound concerned for us and definitely concerned for yourself.
Well,
am I picking that up?
No, you are absolutely right. I'm not only concerned, I would go a step further and say I'm frightened. I truly am frightened because of the implications. What is happening on the Earth, the implications for the human race as a species on the Earth, we are in trouble. The whole human race is in trouble, and something, it's all leading somewhere. It's all going somewhere. And I already know what's coming. I've already been looking at this stuff for years. I know who's doing it. I know why they're doing it. But the problem with trying to explain the real problem is that anything that would be explained to the audience would be entertainment. But the people in power don't look at that kind of thing as entertainment. You're talking too much. So if you really know something, like the old German Freemasons used to say many years ago, those who speak do not know, but those who know do not speak. So if you really do know something of real important value, you had better watch your mouth, because in these days in which we're living, the culprits are so adamant about doing what they're going to do that anyone who gets in their way and presents a plausible problem to them, they will deal with. Because
create a roadblock, look out. Right?
That's right. That's right. They're going to deal with you. And I've already had this kind of stuff happening to me. And of course, I'm concerned about my life because I have my brother to take care of. And I don't have big defenses and lawyers and anything to protect me. And I've been doing this for so many years. There's no use in trying to deny it now. I
mean, You're in it now. You can't pull out.
That's right. And so I live with this threat continually. And people who have never done anything like this don't know what it's like to be the object of attention by powerful people who see you as a liability they can no longer afford. I'm frightened for my future, but I'm also very frightened for what it looks like that's coming. On the earth, and it's going to be big. Whatever it is, it's going to be big.
Jordan, when you are out, do you sometimes like look over your shoulder to see
all
if you're being
time.
Followed?
Yeah, all the time. I place a lot of faith in the fact that I believe I have cosmic companionship that protects me. But I know I've been warned too many times. I'll get people coming up to me, you know, in a parking lot and just saying, Jordan, we know who you are. You better watch your mouth. You better watch what you're doing. You know, you're being watched. I told you I had FBI agents calling me, telling me that. It is frightening because I'm nobody to, you know, to deal with this. but I have to deal with it every day.
Are you glad that you've taken the path that you've taken?
You know what? I thought to myself tonight, I wish George would ask me that particular question, and then you did. No, I am not happy with it at all. I'd like the whole world to know that. I'm very unhappy about some of the choices that I've made. I've made some very big mistakes, as people do in life. But I'm very unhappy about the course that I've been given, and I do believe that's what happened as I was given it. I don't recall ever deciding to do what I do. I just began doing something when I was a teenager. And even as a kid, I was always questioning everything, why people do what they do. What do the words mean? What do the symbols mean? And by the time I was 19 years old, I pretty well had a handle on there's something very dark going on the earth. I have no idea where it's coming from, but I know it's here. And it wasn't until 1967, because I was speaking in Los Angeles as far back as 1962, 63.
On the same subject?
On the same subject. I was giving lectures in little bookstores, mom-and-pop bookstores, and little small venues and libraries and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until 1967 that I was in a library in Glendale, and I was looking up communism because I was fascinated with Nazism and fascism. And then I started looking into the religious and the philosophical, foundations for communism. And I opened up the World Book Encyclopedia, and it was a time I'll never forget. I opened the World Book Encyclopedia to Soviet Union, and there was on the head page was a picture of the flag and the state coat of arms for the Soviet Union. And as I read the little small piece under the picture of the state of coat of arms, it shocked me. It hit me like a brick. Because all the things I have been reading about in Nazism and fascism, and a little bit that I have been doing in research into Soviet communism, certain words and terms and symbols kept coming up over and over and over. America uses them, British use them, the Egyptians use them. So there was it's pattern recognition. Well, when I saw that picture of the National Coat of Arms of the Soviet Union, it knocked me out. I couldn't believe it because for the first time it finally hit me what the symbolism on the world scene really was, what this stuff is really all about, and it was frightening to me. And I've been looking at this stuff now, this particular set of symbols and the words and the terms that were used as far back as 1967. I've been looking at this one subject of the hidden words, terms, catchphrases, symbols that the Illuminati uses around the world. And I am just amazed how it's right here in America in your face, and people have no idea in the world. We have
They were brilliant. They're brilliant to be able to hide this.
In plain sight, right in front of you. That's why I've always believed that there is a legitimate, du jour, magical system that is being used and employed to manipulate the whole human race. And we don't even see it. And I've shown this to people, and they just look at me. I've sat down and gone through and showed them all the symbols used by the Nazis, by the fascists, then by the communists, and then show how it is being used today right in America. Democratic Party uses the same identical symbols that was used in Nazi Germany. The Republican Party using the same identical words, terms, and symbols coming from the Soviet Union. It was just appalling to me that nobody sees this stuff. And it's the kind of a thing, it's the kind of knowledge that's on a need-to-know basis. And the powerful people in this world figure you don't need to know. This is the secret communication among powerful people around the world that are playing jokes on the working class, poor, and the working people of the world. Have no idea in the world how this stuff is really being played.
For some who don't know the episode that I'm going to ask you to relate to us, the time you were on when your phone went dead.
Oh, yes.
Tell us that story.
I was about three-quarters of the way through an interview with you. That was on, it was in 2005, April of 2005. Mm-hmm. And about three-quarters of the way through, all of a sudden, I started talking about the British Israel World Federation and the planet Saturn, and how it is used by the elite of this world. And instantly, my phone went dead. And, it shocked you and me, just totally dead. But instantly, it came back on for me. And I heard people walking around. It was obviously a small office because there you could hear them walking around talking, and the voices were reverberating in a small room. And I heard one guy talking to another saying, somebody's going to have to do something about this guy. And others were talking about me in a low voice, saying something. And then they walked over. I could hear them coming toward the phone, and they hung it up. So I know that they let that. They
wanted you to hear that.
They wanted me to hear. And so then for a couple of days after that, my phone was dead. I was scared. I was actually scared because I was always pictured what I was doing as an American was trying to enlighten my fellow man and my fellow Americans to what was going on, but never realized that I was actually tapping into something that was legitimately legitimate trouble. I mean, I thought I was doing something, that was fascinating to me, and that is bringing out the symbolism and the words and terms that are used. And it's called pattern recognition. I've been looking at this stuff for 48 years, but it was only until that happened, and I heard voices on the other end talking about me, I knew this is government, and you're in trouble. And so now, like I said before, I don't know what to do about this because I'm actually afraid. I'm actually afraid for my life. I'm afraid for my family. And I'm really, really heartbroken thinking about my fellow countrymen and my great republic and the great country that we had.
What's going on, Jordan? What do they want? Why are they doing this?
It has to do with the objectives of some extraordinarily ancient secret societies, fraternal orders that have in mind the total domination of the human race. And it goes back to a long, long time. The symbols, of course, you obviously know the symbolism we use today and government and institutions of higher learning, et cetera, all connected to the secret societies. But there's a bigger story behind all of this. I would ask you to give you a clue. I mean, I'm not going to talk about what I know in public because I don't want to put you in jeopardy. I don't want to put myself in jeopardy. But think about it. What area of the earth has dominated the globe? What area on the earth has dominated the globe for well over 2,000 years? What part of the earth has dominated the rest? Think about it.
I would say it's around the Middle East, around Italy, in that area.
Well, that's not, you know, there's one of two places. Is it Italy or the Middle East? It's obviously Europe and Italy,
yes,
because of the Roman Empire under
right,
the Caesars.
Right.
They have dominated Europe, and Europe has dominated the world. And so, you know, that's the first step in learning who's doing this. Go back to Europe, because remember, when the Founding Fathers founded this country, we had some serious enemies. There was bloodshed. Because for the first time, it's the only time in history it's ever happened, for the first time a group of people got together and said to the royalty and the fascist powers, the manipulating powerful families and institutions of Europe, we are free people. We will no longer crawl on our knees to Rome. We will no longer crawl on our knees to our masters in Europe. We are a free people. And America was the only country that actually had a written constitution that stated that. A written constitution, a contract that stated we will not bow our knees to Rome or Caesar ever again. Well, I've said this so many times. You've got to know that when you come out in public and make a statement like that about the mob or about the you know, the mafia, come out and say things publicly and charge them, you've got to know there's going to be a payback. They may not be able to hit you tonight, but there's going to come a payback. You don't talk to Rome and the European establishment of royalty and princes and kings and a little upstart nation across across the ocean decides they're going to be free. And I'm thinking, can you imagine what the kings of Europe must have thought when they're looking at the King of England and saying, are you going to let these people get away with this?
So true. Hey, Jordan, before we take this break, you were the one really instrumental in me holding off on my Ouija board experiment. Do you still think I did the right thing?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind about it. Believe me, you were putting a lot on the line that you could not afford to do. You were putting yourself on the line. You were putting the network on the line. You were putting possible lawsuits. You were opening up a door to the world that you are not familiar with, that you are not prepared to deal with. I, on the other hand, have been looking at the world of the occult for some 48 years, and I was frightened by the idea of what you're doing. Very, very bad business, and I think you made the right decision. I think the whole world knows that.
We'll be back with Jordan Maxwell. He's behind door number 5. We'll open up the phone lines. The last half hour, you chat with Jordan. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast Jordan. Ready for some phone calls?
Yes, but if you would allow me, please, to say a couple of things before we go to the phone call.
Of course.
What have you mentioned your possibility of going on the Egyptian trip next year?
We haven't pushed it. I just kind of mentioned it a little bit when I had Zahi Hawass on.
Oh, yes.
It's a trip in May. Tom is starting to work on details now. Are you going to?
Yeah, I'm going to be there with you. So I've been there 3 times. It's a real experience. So anyone wants to go with you and I and Tom and whoever else, we're going to be taking quite a few people with us. So
yeah, if we can work out the broadcast situation with the lines,
I knew that would be.
Then we'll go.
Okay, and then there are a couple of other things. One is I want everyone to know that I get 200 to 300 emails a day and 25 to 30 phone calls a day, and I can't get back to everybody. And I get a lot of emails saying, "Well, you didn't answer me, and you didn't call me back, or whatever." So I just want everyone to know it's just me. I
don't have secretaries to answer phones and emails. So I just want everyone to know I really appreciate all the, you know, the emails or whatever, but I just don't, I'm not able to get back to everyone. And anyone who has pictures, I get a lot of people saying, "Boy, I got a great picture here for you. Would you like to have it?" That means I got to go sit down and answer them. So if you got anything you want to send to me, especially pictures for research or whatever, I'd love to have it. So you don't have to ask me. And also, one other thing. There are people going around saying that I got my name from an occult, from an occultist. Jordan Maxwell came from something called Jordanus Maximus. Nothing could be further from the truth. I was called Jordan Maxwell 30 years before I ever got that email. I got an email from someone a couple of years ago saying, "Jordan, did you know that there is that there's a whole story in the occult world about someone called Jordanus Maximus?" And it was, I never heard anything like that. And so they sent me a link, and I was reading it, and I just thought it was clever. I thought it was funny. So I put that on my website under words to look up, and I even said that. If you go to it, I said, "Well, I'm just throwing this one in as a joke. I don't know what it means, but I just thought it was interesting." And it was Jordanus Maximus was, you know, talked about in occult circles. And now people are saying, "Well, there it is. There's where he got his name from Jordanus Maximus." Well, obviously, I was Jordan Maxwell 35 years ago before that email. So it's ludicrous. But I have found that when you're in the public eye, there's going to be a lot of ridicule and taunting and slander and libel against your name and your work and who you are by people who don't know you and have no idea in the world what you're trying to do. They just hear you and they've got to do something, so they attack you. But I think it's interesting that in the Jewish writings, in the holy books, it said that to put out another man's candle does not make yours burn brighter. So just because somebody is saying something about me doesn't make it true. I just wanted to say that.
Oakley, North Carolina, how true, too. Karen, yes. You're on the air with us. Hey, Karen.
Hi. Hi. Happy Thanksgiving, I hope, to both you and
you
Jordan.
You too, Karen.
Thank you, dear.
Jordan, are you familiar with the works of David Icke?
I should be. I brought him to America.
Okay.
I brought him here back in 1950.
We just had David on a little before you.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you. The symbols in his book, are they right on?
Yeah. As I said, I brought David Icke over here back in 1992. I was approached by some of David's friends and asked if I would help bring him over here, which I did. I financed him to come over, financed his books. I financed his lectures, and I brought him over here. I met him, and I was down in San Diego working for a company in which I had the money to do what I wanted to do. So, yeah, I brought him over here myself. So everything he's saying, I don't have any problem with. I think it's a great, you know, great material. But
Jordan, when you took this path, too, you have taken it now at a tremendous income drop for yourself, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I know.
I
live in one room. I live in a two-room office. My brother sleeps on the floor in the front room, and I live on Social Security. I don't own anything. I have no money. I have no bank account. I have no credit cards. I don't own anything. I sleep on a mat in the second office. I got a little two-room office, and each one's about 10 foot square. My brother is very sick. I wait on him hand and foot.
Jeez, you've got your computer. That's about it.
That's it. I just got my phone and my computer and do what I do. And the whole world is what I do it for. I do what I do because I love trying to help people.
Hey, Jordan.
Yes.
Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, thank goodness.
If he leaves, we're all in trouble.
I live in a similar situation as you. I live in an abandoned building. Because, I'm keeping warm. I have my chihuahua.
Yeah.
And
where are you calling from, a cell phone or something?
No, I'm calling from a phone that's plugged in at the pole of a neighbor's house.
Oh, okay.
I have enough savvy to know that these things are not copacetic to talk about.
Well, I know. That's why I just...
And
I
have not been given my real name or anything, so, because I want to protect my life. I'm like you, Jordan. I don't want to cash it in yet. I'm in my 50s. But
I appreciate what you're saying, and I know we got other callers, and all I could say is, I know what that's like, being hounded and fearing for one's life. It's because, you know, it's an old saying, it's very dangerous to be right when your country is wrong. And with the people who are doing what they're doing to the country today, I know who they are. I know what the words mean. I've spent 40-some-odd years studying the world of the occult. I know exactly what they're saying, what they're doing, and how they're doing it. And it's frightening to me because I can't do anything about it. If I say anything, it's just going to be entertainment for the audience, but it's going to be frightening for me because now I've talked too much. I've been told that I'm a liability that this government cannot afford. So you better watch your mouth. And so I take that seriously.
First-time caller, Anchorage, Alaska, Joseph. Hey, Joseph.
Hi, how are you doing? Happy
Good.
Thanksgiving, Jordan.
You too, Joseph.
Thank you. I know you can't really say very much, but in what ways do you see like any control being implemented, and how do you see like domination or that kind of thing going as far as, you know, where we are now and where we'll be?
All right, let me answer that. First of all, I do not believe that America would be able to extricate herself out of the trouble. I mean, a lot of people have ideas about, well, everything's going to be all right in a little while. Well, no, they're not going to be all right in a little while.
That'll be a perception if
That's
it happens.
Exactly. It will be a perception. Just as the German people were told, well, of course, Herr Führer is acting a little unkind now, and he's doing some crazy things. But once he gets in, you know, everything under control, everything's going to be just fine. Well, 1945, they found out, no, it's not going to be just fine. It's the end of your country. 1945, Berlin was blown to asunder. And so in order to understand who is doing this thing to this country, you have to understand the secret societies, the fraternal orders that are operating within our border. And the people who are in power in this country are working for our enemies. They are using the terms and the symbols and the words and the catchphrases of the European secret societies. They are working for our enemies. This is why no matter what you do, nothing is going to work, because the people of this country don't understand the symbols. They don't understand the terms, the words. They don't know what's going on. And so all you see on television are talking heads, and they're always laughing and talking and theorizing. But never, ever have I ever seen anyone ask the right questions. And anyone who does ask the right questions is going to be in trouble. So as far as I'm concerned, until and unless Americans wake up and put away this haughty, arrogant, pompous know-it-all and come to the conclusion that, yes, we've been had. Now tell us who did it to us and why we're here where we are. Now you're going someplace. Now you're finally getting down to what is really going on. And I'm telling you, I've been watching this country for many years, and I am just appalled at how much the people of America don't know. It's extraordinary.
Let's go to Ellie in Vermont. You're on with Jordan. Go ahead, Ellie.
Oh, yes. Hi. Glad to meet you. I'm one of those creatures of the night type person. I wanted to like try to bring this up one more level as far as what's going on. I'm one of those UFO abductee people and have met people from other planets and all this and that. And my question of who's the enemy is, I don't believe this Illuminati is even on this planet. I think the people that are actually trying to govern or do govern this planet are what you would call off-worlders. And I'd like to know, Jordan, what you think we could do about this, because a lot of the symbols that you see are on their spaceships. And this is going much farther than just this planet. And I'd like your opinion of what you think we can do about it.
All right. Let me answer that. I think you are exactly, precisely right, that what we're looking at is something that is cosmic in scope. That's why I said originally on tonight that I am frightened for the entire planet, for the whole world, because what is actually transpiring now on the Earth, Americans are first and finally starting to feel what is coming, but it is not human. It's inhuman. It has an intelligence which is extraordinarily brilliant. Minds are doing this to the human race. And I've been looking at this one subject for 45 years. I'm telling you, we are being dealt with by extraordinary minds, which I personally believe are not of this earth. I think it is a cosmic problem that we are facing, and we have no idea in the world what this enemy is really all about. And we're beginning to see some of the symbols and emblems. And this last election thing going on, I was amazed. Both sides are using terms that the Soviets used, that the Soviet secret societies, that the Thule Society in Germany was using. The symbols and the words, the terms, you start breaking it down. It's in Hollywood. It's in movies. It's in music. I don't even know what to say about this. It's just so overwhelmingly obvious to me because I've spent my whole life tracing down these symbols and words and terms that are used in music and movies and television. And it's a cosmic problem. It's a worldwide thing which is going on. And the people of this earth have no comprehension whatsoever of who's doing it and how it's working. And until we do that, we're just going to keep going further and further in and never realizing who's doing it to us and how they're doing it. It's a very high technology.
Who actually sits down and puts this together, Jordan?
I know. This is put together a long time ago.
Yep.
A long time ago. And before the Roman Empire, it was already codified. The Romans picked it up because they were Etruscans. They picked up all these ancient symbols coming out of the Middle East and Africa and Asia and began to put together a whole new order of the race of people on the earth. You know, I could go on for hours doing slide presentations explaining all of this, but it's just more than I can handle by myself. As I said, I'm just one person living with my sick brother in two little rooms with nothing. So,
Jordan, get your website out for us, would you?
Yes. It's simply jordanmaxwell.com. Jordan is like the river, Jordan. Maxwell. Jordanmaxwell.com.
I'll see you when I come back to Los Angeles, Jordan.
I hope so. Yeah, I'd love to sit and chat with you in private.
All right, you take care of yourself.
Thank you for having me on. Goodbye.
That's Jordan Maxwell behind door number 5. Now, don't forget, on our Friday night edition, it'll be a little guest or two at the top of the hour, and then we'll have our Friday and the Saturday morning open lines this Thanksgiving weekend. Can't believe we're already through Thanksgiving already. Christmas right around the corner. Ah, for Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom, Dan Heiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.